the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 333. On the podcast today, I have Inspirit Energy CEO John Gunn talking about the company there, how they're doing, what they expect to do in the future, plus how the day's penny stock with potential. And this podcast is dedicated to Ash. Oh, sorry, I also have Nicola Duke. How can I forget Nicola? Wow! The Duchess of the Chart. Nicola will be looking at these following stocks: Tesco, Standard Chartered, Box Hill Technology, Stat Aero, and Atlas Support and Development Services, ADSS there. Plus, of course, this podcast is dedicated to AshEp99, who gave me a 5-star rating and cracking review on iTunes, and I'll be reading that out in a bit. But before that, the reason why I've asked Nicola to chart Atlas Support and Development Services, whatever it's called, ADSS, is that's my second stock in my £1 million penny stock punt experiment. And they announced a placing today. Well, in fact, they announced a general meeting to pass a resolution to get this placing away because it's such a big issue of stock. So they're issuing 500 million shares. And at the moment, they only have an issue 483 million. So you can see it's doubling the shares in issue, and so it's quite dilutive. But it'd be interesting to see how much they raise, because they haven't said that. They're going to pass the resolution first. And we look at the chart with Nicola, and do you know what? There's a lot of people negative on this company, and I am particularly, because I've asked them several times to come on the podcast. They're very close this week to coming on, and then all of a sudden they couldn't. Because of travel arrangements or something. Hopefully I will get them on to talk about the business they're doing and what's happening there. But do you know what? There's a lot of negativity, like I said, on Twitter today about ADSS because of this placing and the lack of communication. And I do welcome, I do think this is, you know, a couple of times I've had companies not come on the podcast. And to me, it doesn't signal good communication at all and transparency. You know, it's nice to have a company just come on and chat about what they're not, you know, not be scared. In fact, John Gunn does that today. He's not scared to ask any question. I put all questions to him from investors and he tackles every single question. And I think if you're a business and, you know, you're a company where you have shareholders who own the company pretty much, then you have to be prepared to answer their questions. And I quite like that kind of transparency. But having said that, for all the negativity surrounding ADSS, maybe I'm a fool. Maybe I'm an optimistic fool. But I'm looking right now at the share price. It hasn't touched the lows that they were previously revisited back in the summer months. And I'm thinking now, hopefully, with a bit of extra cash here, they'll be free, you know, because for a long time people have been saying there's cash burn going on, will they be raising money? And so this has been hanging over them for a while. They have diversified away from the oil and gas sector. So hopefully, with some cash on board, and they're getting some deals, just in a joint venture with Orchid Development Services, or a business in Ethiopia, hopefully they're going to be moving forward with this cash, and we'll see some positive news flow. So maybe I'm stupid, maybe I'm a fool, but I think all the bad news is in the price. That's what I think. So we haven't retested those lows that we're hitting back in the summer. So I'm hopefully, you know, hoping is hope. Fingers crossed here, touching wood. That's my head. That we will grind a bit higher. Maybe that target price of mine, which is about 1.7, I think. Once I get that price, well, I've doubled the money. I'm out into the next stock. Joining me on the podcast right now is John Gunn, Chief Executive Officer of Inspirit Energy. John, thanks for joining me.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, there's a lot of interest in your company. I have a lot of people approach me saying, can you get some of the guys on from Inspirit Energy on the podcast to chat about what you're doing? So for those people who know about the company and those who don't know about the company, can you give us a broad outline as to what exactly you do, please, John?
Okay. Well, Inspirit Energy have developed a boiler. It's a conventional boiler, not too dissimilar to what most people would have in their homes or businesses would have in their plant rooms. The advantage of our boiler is that aside from providing you with your thermal needs, which is obviously hot water for showers, for baths, but also for your central heating system, as a byproduct of our appliance, we produce 3 kilowatts of electricity. And that's quite significant because that electricity can be used directly into your home. So it reduces your energy bills. But additionally, if you don't consume that electricity can be exported back to the grid And obviously there's a fiscal benefit for that. And then that electricity would literally go straight back into the grid and be used, you know, again, within the local community. So your next door neighbor or a street lamp and so on and so forth. So that, that's the basis of our product.
Okay. Yeah. So the boiler itself, I mean, is there a way of saying for the average household how much more efficient it would be than the average boiler?
Well, you have to look at efficiency overall. So we have effectively a source of gas that goes into the appliance, energy that goes into the appliance, which is gas. And that gas is obviously then used to create two forms of energy that come out of it. One is thermal energy, and the other is electrical energy. So the overall efficiency of our appliance is about 92%. And that is broken down into 75% thermal and 17% electrical efficiency. But there's a great significance to that, because if you think today, the consumer today is paying approximately, you know, 13, 14, 15 pence a kilowatt hour for their electricity. Whereas the Inspirit appliance produces electricity from gas, which is costing you 2, 2.5 pence, maybe 3 pence if you're a residential customer per kilowatt hour. So our appliance actually produces electricity sub 3 pence per kilowatt hour. So it is not only extremely efficient, but it is also extremely cheap. Now, when you compare that to a power station, say for example, so for every kilowatt of energy you put into a coal-fired or gas-fired power station, you're likely to get about 0.3, 0.4 kilowatts of electricity coming out of it. So the Inspirit appliance produces very clean, it reduces carbon emissions by about 60%, and it produces your electricity at about 25% of the cost that you'd be paying from your utility provider. So it has a lot of advantages. And obviously, the more the consumer uses the appliance, the greater the benefit that you'd get from that appliance.
Okay, and so where are you in the timeline here? I mean, are these boilers out there? Are they about to be produced? Where are you in the timeline of producing these boilers?
Okay, well, I'm very pleased to say that today, you know, we've dealt with, you know, we're sort of post-development stage. We now have our trial appliances in our facility up in Sheffield. And if there's any institutions out there or brokers out there that want to come down, or we can organize a presentation for you at our facility in Sheffield. I'll be very proud to take you up there and show you the facility and what we're doing. But what we've done today is we've built 10 test appliances. We're running those appliances through a vigorous testing regime at the moment. And the reason for that is that, you know, we've seen other companies go to market with products, even the more developed companies and the brand name companies take their products to market. And of course, you know, they have in the past been issues. What we've done today, and I'm glad to say that we've gone through that process, is we've tested our machine on a series of 100-hour tests, continuously running the appliance in various scenarios, forced environments and natural environments, in order to demonstrate the durability of the product. And I'm pleased to say today that the product is fit for purpose. From here, what we do is we take each appliance out so that it gets its gas appliance directive certification before a unit can go into premises. It must be tested to see that it's gas safe, of course. It's a process that our appliance, like everybody else's appliance, has to go through, and it's been built to the standards. So once that's achieved, we will then be putting our appliances into commercial installations. And again, these are not test facilities. These will actually be in businesses, restaurants, nursing homes, you know, facilities such as that. And that's where we are today. From there, what we hope to achieve thereafter is to start building our sales and marketing, which will lead obviously to commercial sales.
Okay, so the gas cert is the sort of next step, is it, essentially along the line?
Yes, it is. And you know, as I said, the appliance has been built to specification. So it's not something that we're sort of sitting there with bated breath. It's something that the appliance will achieve that standard. And of course, we've had appliances in trial before. And so, of course, we've been through this process before. So it's not something that's new to us.
Okay, so are you reasonably confident that when it comes to that stage of getting a gas certification, you will achieve that?
Oh, of course, yes. I mean, yes. I mean, you know, it'd be arrogant of me to say it's a given, but it's, you know, it's almost a given, say. Yeah. So, yeah, if there was any feedback, you know, it may be a minor sort of technical issue that we may need to adjust or something like that. But no, the the appliance will get its directive, and then we can move forward with the commercialization. So what's great about our business today is that, you know, we've been through a long period of developing the technology. We've reached a period today where, you know, we now have a production appliance. It's not a bench appliance. It's not a crude appliance. It's a product that's ready to go to market. And it really is now a very interesting time because, you know, we're talking about building nuclear power stations in the UK. We're talking about creating, you know, connections to Iceland to take care of sort of what I call mass geothermal systems. And, you know, great. It's good to be thinking about, you know, turning off the fossil fuel, you know, power stations. But think of the cost, you know, of you know, creating these, you know, new forms of energy. And when you look at the cost per kilowatt hour, say, for example, you know, the British government has agreed to pay up to 9.25 pence a kilowatt hour of the new nuclear capability that's going to be built in the UK by EDF with Chinese finance. And, you know, you compare that to electricity that we're generating in your home, you know, at as little as, you know, 2.5 pence a kilowatt hour. You know, if you take our product and you look at the UK market overall, you know, there's 30 million boilers in the UK. There's 1.6 million boilers being replaced each year. If you consider our appliance in, you know, in those sort of quantities, or just say, for example, you know, the next 5 years, if up to 500,000 of our appliances were to go into commercial installations in the UK, you'd be turning off a power station.
Well, do you know, I know you're sort of in line with policy because even today I was listening to a podcast on Radio 5 Live, and they were talking about, I think it was the government trying to encourage a bit, or utilities trying to encourage big businesses to switch off or switch down their power at demand hours because obviously there's a strain on the grid there. So I know it's in line.
I read it myself. Yeah. I read it myself, and I actually circulated it to a number of people. You've got to think of the future. You've got to think how the world is changing. You've got to think of disruptive technologies. If you look at the InSpirit boiler, It's a retrofit. It doesn't require planning. It doesn't require, you know, any new additional installation in your home. You take out your old boiler, you install your InSpirit charger, and it runs on natural gas, but it can run on other forms of gas. It can run on LPG. You know, you then, you know, add the other aspects that you need for any other boiler, water, electricity. And so it's as simple as that. It's a straightforward retrofit. It's the size of a dishwasher. It's floor mounted, it's not wall mounted. That's probably the only difference. From there, you have a power plant. Now, it's an intelligent power plant because it can be controlled remotely. So if you're looking at these and you're looking at them on a mass scale, you can effectively trigger the appliance to start and generate electricity. And as we all know with water, you can generate your hot water and store it in your water cylinder and use it later on. But what it does enable you to do is to create, you know, a mini power station when obviously you're looking at, you know, multiple appliances in situ.
Do you know what? I'm a Luddite. When it comes to, you know, anything to do with DIY or houses, I mean, our boiler, bought a new house last year, had a lot done to it. The only thing we didn't do was the boiler. And now, obviously, so do all boilers, I may sound stupid here, but do all boilers run off gas? Is that what happens?
The majority of boilers run off gas, yes. And of course, you know, most of the Northern Hemisphere has a gas grid network, which is great. And gas is cheap, and there's plenty of it. I mean, you know, ask an analyst to speculate when the world will run out of gas, and, you know, it's a long, long time. So that's one thing we know that we have plenty of. But the boiler can actually run off the electricity generating side of the boiler. You know, it can run off other fuel sources. So, you know, if you go out to the countryside where you may not have, say, for example, a gas grid network, you know, you may have Caligas there, for example. So boilers can run off other fuels.
Okay, so what I'm saying in a ham-fisted way, if I wanted to buy a new boiler, what would be, would there be any restrictions from me getting one of your boilers, or would I need to, if I didn't have gas plumbed in, I mean, would I need to get gas plumbed in?
Yes, I mean, you know, if you go to get any boiler, you'd need to get gas plumbed in. You know, you don't necessarily have to be on the grid. You know, you can have your own tank in your garden, and many people do that live remotely. Yeah. And obviously, we are, you know, as our RNSs have stated, we are talking to companies that are in that area as well that do provide that energy. So, Yes, but by majority, if you look at the market overall, you know, if you look at the market in the UK, which is one of the larger markets, for boilers, and in terms of the amount of boilers and the replacement, you know, but you have about 8 million boilers replaced in Europe, 3 million boilers replaced in the USA. So it's a significant market. It's certainly a market that's here to stay. What's interesting is that the market overall goes through various changes over the years, over the decades, say. And I know the focus today is on MCHP, micro combined heat and power, and that's what our product fits into. There's competition out there, which is good. You don't want to stand alone in this marketplace. You want to see that there's a change going on in the industry. And we are today. What's significant about the Inspirit appliance is the amount of electricity that it actually produces. 3 kilowatts is significant. At the same time, it produces 15 kilowatts of thermal energy, which is adequate to meet your needs. See, thermal energy can be created over a long period of time and stored. And what you really want to be doing is you want to be using the Inspirit appliance as much as possible, because on the basis of the electricity that you're getting, the saving that you're making, and there are government tariffs that support appliances in this field as well. So there is an opportunity with the Inspirit appliance to take advantage of those tariffs if you lower the electrical output, because there's a cap on the amount of electricity that a unit has to produce to qualify for the tariff. So Inspirit will have a 2 kilowatt appliance which will qualify for the tariff, and a 3 kilowatt appliance that won't. But you'll tend to find that most of the commercial installations will want the high electrical output, and the efficiency that they get from that and the payback that they get from that is the incentive that will drive the sales of our appliance.
Okay, marvellous. Well, let's go back to the timeline. So the gas certification, how long do you predict that will take until you've got that? When is it, this year or next year or when?
No, we're very hopeful we'll achieve it this year. Okay. And we have our trial partners. So we've been in discussions with them for some time. We've been to their facilities by majority. And so obviously those appliances will go in the new year into those installations. And really from there, the business then starts to move into the next commercial phase. And that's really important for us.
So you've got the gas cert, I'm just writing this down, then the commercial installations, and how long you're testing these in real environments, how long will you be testing these for in real environments?
Well, I think what we've done is we've selected trial partners that have got, scope to become significant consumers of our product. Mm-hmm. So we've gone out to trial partners who will, potentially order tens, hundreds, let's hope one day thousands of our units. So that's really important. But no, we intend to go into a marketing phase straight after the installation of our trial appliances. We've carried out trials in our own facility. We're extremely confident with the durability and the longevity of our appliance. I mean, the wonderful thing about our Stirling, our engine, which produces the electricity, is it's sealed for life, which basically means you don't have to, carry out any servicing or maintenance on the appliance. So that's really quite significant. So, no, we will go into production. We've forecast to go into low volume production, and we're forecasting 1,500 units in the first year. And, that will ramp up to 25,000 units a year by year four.
Okay, and so when will that initial commercialization be? Is it next year or year after? What do you think?
First quarter of 2016.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. So, and are you targeting sort of commercial places first, or are you going with domestic and commercial? What's going on there?
No, we're not. We're going for the commercial. And the reason for that mainly is that, firstly, as you'll appreciate, when you're manufacturing in low volume, it's a high price. There are huge economies of scale as you start to go into mass manufacturing. But on low volume production, which we will be carrying out, the commercial customer has obviously the wherewithal to meet that price point. They also have the need as well, because they have the need for the electricity, and they also have the need to manage their electricity to avoid having spikes. And obviously, as I said, the payback, i.e. how much money you will save to cover the cost of this appliance, is at its most advantageous when you're using the appliance to its maximum. So anybody using the appliance, say, for example, 15, 18 hours a day, would be looking at a payback of under 4 years. Now, that's very, very significant. So as and when sales ramp up, as and when manufacturing volumes increase, as and when the price comes down, we will then start to tackle the domestic market as well. But there's a lot for us to see where government policy is today. Will the government increase the tariff, from 2 kilowatts to 3 kilowatts? Will they increase the feed-in tariff in terms of the price that they'll pay per kilowatt hour? You know, we have to see. We've seen a lot of other areas within the marketplace today where it's been reduced or even taken away. What I'm glad to say is we haven't modeled our business on a feed-in tariff. We've modeled our business simply on providing a product to the market which can give them a payback purely on the economic savings that they'll make from lower electricity costs.
I see. And is this marketing just the UK initially, or are you going to Europe? What's happening there?
Well, yes. We've got interest from Europe. There's no question about that. At the moment, we intend to focus initially on the UK market. And the main reasons for that is, you know, we're very realistic in our approach. You've got to look at, obviously, at, you know, the maintenance aspect of it as well. And from an installation point of view, from a distribution point of view. So, yes, our primary market is going to be the UK. If, though, in the future, we're able to tie in with partners in terms of manufacturing that can provide us with, you know, distribution, say, for example, and that service and maintenance aspect, then obviously we would look at going into those territories as well. But there's no question about it. The product fits very comfortably into most European Union members. I think the only country that doesn't have a gas grid network is Belgium. So, I mean, outside of that, most other European nations do.
Okay, so you can see the commercial benefits of someone actually using the system. Have you got any comparisons with the initial outlay for, you know, a commercial premises buying your system compared to traditional sort of boilers?
Yes, I mean, you know, the target price we have for launch is about £10,000 per unit. And then as we get up to volume sales, as I mentioned in year four, you'll be looking at a unit selling for about £3,300 to £3,500. So there's considerable savings to be obtained from economies of scale.
Okay, and how does that compare with, you know, a traditional, you say £10,000, compared to what price they can get them at now?
Well, I mean, you know, boilers vary in price. I mean, I'm sure if you go down to your local Wickes, you know, you'll buy an unbranded product. You know, I don't know, £800, £900, £1,000, maybe even less. You know, if you're going out and you're buying a good branded product, reliable, so on and so forth, you know, you may be looking at £1,800, you know, to £2,000. And that's fine, but that is a cost. You know, the Inspirit appliance actually generates revenue. Mm-hmm. And it generates revenue because it's saving you money. So if you're saving 10 pence a kilowatt hour and we're producing 3 kilowatts an hour, that's 30 pence an hour. If you're running it 20 hours a day, you know, that's £6 a day. If you're running it for, you know, 200 days a year, that's £1,200, say. I mean, that's an example. And that's obviously going to reduce, you know, your energy bills by that amount of money. And that's going straight into your pockets, say, for example. So, you know, over the lifetime of the product, not only will you pay for the capital cost of the product, but you'll continue to make energy savings for the life of the product.
Yeah. Okay. Let's have a couple of questions here from private investors. So here's the first one: MCHP boilers are unreliable. British Gas Research and Development trailed them in the 1980s. What has changed to make your technology reliable?
It's a great question. You know, it's a really good question, and I'm glad you're asking it. You know, I've lived the lifetime of this product. You know, it's MCHP. You know, I've been involved now for about close to, 11, 12 years. And I've seen these other products develop, and I've been in the trials with them. We carried out trials with the Carbon Trust a number of years ago, and we saw a number of these products. And yes, today they haven't proven themselves to be reliable. We've seen fuel cell technologies, which are still about. But, you know, a lot of money has been spent on those technologies, and we've yet really to see a product come to market. And obviously, we've seen British Gas spend a considerable amount of money in their own technology. That unit, actually, that British Gas produced is in the marketplace today, and it is being distributed. It is a 1 kilowatt unit. And our argument always has been that, to be honest with you, the cost of a 1 kilowatt unit versus the economic advantages are minimal. And obviously where we feel that we have the advantage is obviously that we produce 3 kilowatts of electricity. I'm glad to say today that I can only speak for Inspirit when I can tell you that we have vigorously tested our appliance, and today it is reliable. And that's a combination of investment, into engineering, working with fantastic engineering partners who we've worked with in the UK. And it really also comes down in part as well to certain materials that weren't available to us years ago that are available to us today. And really that's brought us up to a point where we are today, where we do have a product which is fit for purpose.
Okay, cool. Next question. What has happened with the talks with major utility companies that were happening in 2014?
We are always talking to utility companies. They're very interested in our product. Both gas and electrical companies, you know, why wouldn't they? Any utility that sells gas wants to sell more gas. Any product that burns gas has got to be interesting to them. So from that point of view, we have been in discussions with utilities and we maintain ongoing relationships with them.
Marvelous.
That hasn't changed.
Cool. All right. So it's ongoing. Excellent. And last question here. Can you ask, John, if there will be a placing or use of a loan facility?
Right. Okay. Two questions. We don't anticipate a placing in the near term. To be honest with you, we feel that the value of our company today is significantly greater than that of our market cap. But I guess that's a comment that pretty much any CEO would say. But we do believe that. Today, we have a loan facility provided to us by a company called Yorkville. We've only drawn down on a very, we've drawn down on a proportion of it, and we're actually repaying it. So we're certainly not increasing that facility, that I can tell you. And in fact, we are repaying it, and we've made a significant repayment to them this week, and we'll continue to do that until that loan is discharged. In the meantime, myself and other directors, as noted in our previous annual report, have committed to providing loans to the company. They're not convertible. They're not toxic in any way. They're on low interest rates. And we're doing that because we believe in the company. So we're going to continue to do that. What I would add, though, is that we've spent the money on engineering. You know, I'm not going to say that we don't have further expenditures ahead of us, because we do. But because of the way we run our business, we outsource pieces of work. So the power electronics, for example, were carried out by Centec. Engineering issues carried out by Enertech. You know, on the engine side, a lot of that work was carried out in the past by ProDrive. So, and you know, we use a lot of local companies around Sheffield as well for specialist welding and aspects like that. So, and companies in Germany for the seals. So from that point of view, you know, when we're not engineering, our overheads drop dramatically. And today we're not engineering. We've achieved that. So we're running our engineering team in Sheffield. We've got our sales and marketing team on board as well, which is incredibly competent with a lot of industry experience. So to be honest with you, we've dropped back to quite a low burn. It's comfortable. And what we're going to do now is we're going to take the product forward. I've talked to you about some of the milestones. And, you know, we're going to see ourselves through that. And we're going to see how, you know, we're going to look at the scope of the opportunity that we're presented with. And as a board, we'll make a decision from there.
Yeah. And do you know offhand what is your sort of burn rate?
I think as a business today, we're burning £50,000 to £60,000 on the current rate. Okay. It's low. I mean, you know,
that's per what?
Per month.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not significant. And myself and other directors are committed to meeting the company's burn. But at the moment, you know, we have cash in the bank. You know, we get some advantages from the government. You know, we get some R&D tax credits and things like that that come through from our expenditures. So we've been through a period of quite a high burn, which is now complete. We've got some of those tax credits back from the government. So we've got cash in the bank. We've paid down a bit of debt. And of course, the company has got facilities which have been provided by the directors, which we've committed to. And of course, we'll honour.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Excellent. Those are the questions. That's pretty much it. All I'd like you to do now is basically sell it to me. I'm not an investor in your company yet, but I could be. You never know. So if in 3 points you can sort of sell me on why I should invest in Insprit Energy.
I think because we have a disruptive technology which is coming to the market along with other technologies which will change the way that we look at energy. Each home is going to have the responsibility to meet some capacity for, you know, for micro generation. And the Insprit boiler is probably one of the simplest ways to achieve it. It's not like solar. You don't need a roof. You don't need planning permission. It's not like wind. This boiler goes into your boiler room in your home. That's point one. Point two, the market, the scope for this is significant. You know, talking about quantity of boilers, 30 million boilers in the UK, the replacement market, 1.6 million boilers in the UK, 800,000 in Europe, 3 million in the USA. And then, of course, you know, you've then got Asia as well, Japan. So the scope is considerable. And we have a very conservative forecast. You know, we're talking about 1,500 boilers in year one makes us a profitable company, going up to 25,000 boilers per year. So we're very realistic in our approach as well. And I think that's really important for investors to see that we're not making statements that we don't believe that we can't meet at the end of the day. And I think the other thing as well, third point, look at your energy costs today. We have today increasing fuel poverty. People can't afford to heat their homes. Governments have a responsibility to tackle that. At the same time, we're having nuclear capability being built in the UK when, you know, we've all seen the horrors of what happened in Japan, and yet we're going ahead with that. We have a great, you know, we have an obligation to reduce, you know, power stations that run on fossil fuels. So from that point of view, these are really compelling arguments to say, you know, you can actually just replace your boiler in your home with a 3 kilowatt Inspirit charger and reduce your energy bills considerably. So I think that's really where the penny drops.
Nice, John. Thanks very much for coming on the podcast. And I'm sure people who have never heard of you are now well informed. So by all means, come back on. And when you have some more news, share that with us too.
I will do. Thank you for your time.
Okay, it's time for today's penny stock with potential, suggested by Dan. What's the name and ticker symbol? Include both, please. That's what I say when you fill the form. And by all means, if you want to suggest a penny stock with potential, then click the link here at sharepickers.com and you'll see all the details here. Dan has suggested Trinity Exploration and Production. TRIN is the ticker. What does the company do? Oil and gas exploration and production in Trinidad. Yeah, man. Would you say it's a short, medium, or long-term investment? All of the above. Dan is confident. How many shares does the company have in issue? 94 million. Wow, it's not a lot, is it? Let me have a look at that. I want to check that out. Let's go up here. Sorry, this is not live, but I'm doing it on the fly, of course. So, Trin. Yep. 94.8 million. That's right. It is. Danny, you're all right. You're all right, fella. Spot on. Well done there. What's the current price and market cap of the company? So 5.9 and 5.5 million. 5.9 pence. Let's have a look. It's at the moment. Market cap is 7.1. The previous was 7.5. So it's gone up by. That's gone up a lot, isn't it? Let's work it out. That's almost 40-odd%. Well done, Dan. You suggested it's the right time, fella. I hope you're in this and you've taken a bit of money there. Okay, list the three reasons why you think the company has potential. Number one, high director ownership, over 25%. Number two, production of 3,000 barrels per day. And last year made a 186 million barrels discovery. Wow, 186 million barrels day discovery last year, apparently. So, wow. Number three, needs to clear £12 million debt first and then it will tend back. Okay, I said, do you know what? This is why I like this feature. Just three bullet points. Dan, you've done well here. You've covered very good, you know, information just in a couple of sentences. You could fit that all in a tweet. And that's, and to me, I've learned about this company. So that's Trinity Exploration and Production, T-R-I-N. Thank you for that, Dan. And Dan thinks this is a possible 10-bagger. All right. Dan, thanks. By all means, click the link if you want to suggest a penny stock with potential. And joining me on the podcast right now, it's the Duchess of the Chart, the lady who does tech. Hi, Nick. You're right. Nicola Duke.
Hello, Justin. Very good, thanks.
So you've been watching old Mark Carney there, Governor of the Bank of England. And what's that? Do you know what? Because I'm in smaller caps at the moment. I'm not really paying much attention to it. But I saw someone on Twitter saying, oh, the pound's dropped there. And what's he said, basically?
Oh, I mean, the pound fell out of the sky like a falling fridge. He basically took any possibility of rate hikes away at the turn of the year, whereas, you know, for months now, every time he's spoken, he said that rate hikes would come into sharper focus around the turn of the year. And, you know, the time is coming when they will have to hike rates and all this kind of thing. And then today basically took all of that away, talked about global risks and the possibility that they may even cut rates further.
Wow. So he's done a bit of a U-turn. But the language they use, it's ridiculous, isn't it? You know, they do shroud it in a bit of mystery and, you know, highfalutin talk when they just, you know. I mean, is he basically copying the Fed? Is he waiting for the Fed to do something, then he'll do something? Is that what it is about, really?
No, I don't understand it, because there's really very little. The changes in the data are really very, very small, certainly not enough to warrant a U-turn like this. I think a lot of the move in the pound was, you know, people positioned wrong because they believed him, and you shouldn't believe him. You know, certainly if the Fed are determined to hike, it's less pressure on the Bank of England to rush, you know, to hike. But
yeah, but didn't he say, you said recently, on a personal level, he gave his opinion, didn't he? And then he went back and said, well, that wasn't the opinion of the committee.
In the press conference, you know, especially Robert Peston asked him quite directly, do you regret saying this because people remortgage their houses, you know, based on what you said about rate hikes and the end of the year? And he said, he kind of waffled a bit and said, well, I really don't want to go into it because that was my personal opinion and I'm here today to talk about the views of the committee, which is really naughty because, you know, he should represent the Bank of England when he's asked to speak and give his an opinion.
Yeah, and, you know, just before we press record, I just think it's a ridiculous thing to say. If he thinks that, he's so naive. And why didn't you just admit? It'd be nice to say, I made a mistake. Of course, when people ask me on a personal level, they ask me as the Bank of England governor, because that's who I am. And now my opinion and the MPC's opinion are intertwined. There's going to be confusion there. So I should never give a personal opinion if it's different than the committee's. I think it's very naive and stupid to say that. It's like, you know, going to see someone who's selling carpets and say, is this a good carpet to buy? And they'd say, yes, it is. And then you buy it and it falls apart. So that was a personal opinion. It wasn't the opinion of the shop. You know, it's a ridiculous thing to say. You know, it's entwined. He's the same guy. He was asked that because he was the Bank of England governor. He wasn't asked because, like a normal Joe Bloggs. It's silly to say that, isn't he, really?
Oh, I completely agree. And not only that, he wasn't the only one saying that. A lot of them were saying that. And they certainly got everybody worked up for a rate hike in the summer, talking about it. And not only that, but, you know, forward guidance is a policy tool. So the market pays very close attention to what he says. And he knows that because it is. And he says it's a policy tool. So
Do we see the... when is the target now for the rate hike? Do we know? Is it end of...
There is no target. They're not talking about rate hikes at all.
So it could be even end of next year, 2017, maybe.
Exactly. They're talking about downside risks and that they could cut rates further.
Yeah, I don't mind that because I've got to remortgage my... I've got to come off this deal with my mortgage in August next year, and I hopefully get a good deal, you know, so that's fine for me. okay, let's ignore Mark Carney.
Not so fine for the people that did remortgage.
No, exactly. It's a little... Well, is it? I don't know, because, I suppose... Were they scared rates are going up? And then they sort of... maybe, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's move on to more important things anyway.
Right,
Let's look at some charts, Nick. So I sent some stocks over to you. Go ahead, go with them, and I'll follow you.
Okay, we're going to start with Tesco.
Yes, because this has been bobbing about, isn't it? It's do you know what? It looks to me, I said right now, it's at about 186, but it hit that low when then all the worst news came out. It went down to 150-something, and it did a bit of double bottom, didn't it? It's 164 or something or other. It went all the way back up. Broke the £2. Look at that. But there's no such thing as a V-shaped recovery, is it, really? You know, no. And it pulled back again. It went below £2. But it seems as found some support around about the 181. Why is that significant, that 181 or 180 level? Because that's where it's found support, isn't it?
It has. And, you know, not only that, but it's made a, you know, what now a higher low. So where we got that really nice double bottom at the very end of September, a big bullish candle and a double bottom. If you spotted that, not only that, but it was a measured move. So from the April high to the July low, that swing was equal to the swing from the July high to the September low. So a bounce there means that entire decline was corrective, and we should see new highs now if we continue higher above the April high, which is at 252.
Yeah. Okay.
So what we got? So we got a really good bounce off our double bottom and our ABCD measured move target, and this is all on the charts. If people think I'm talking rubbish, it will be all marked on the chart. Yeah. So we got a high. So we took out the September high. So we made a higher high, then we made a higher low. So we can say now that the trend has reversed, and provided we don't take out that late September low, we are trending higher. The 20 exponential moving average has moved above the 50 moving average. So our moving averages say that we can buy dips against that now.
Yeah.
And it looks pretty good. So it looks a bit of a bull flag. Mm-hmm. I would say that the resistance is about 190. So a move above 190, our first target would be 220. And then we would be looking for new highs.
Cool. All right. So,
I know that's a bit of a bold call for Tesco. Tesco.
But they're taking a bit of a slumber now. I can't see them going back to the lows, because they are doing some drastic measures to turn it around there. So, I mean, they are dealing with this situation. And, you know, it'll be a different shop by the time they start, you know, the figures start coming through. But, yeah, I think, you know, you're scaling in now. So, you're investing in Tesco's. Should be okay, I think, really.
Yeah. A good confirmation of this move, you can draw a trend line from the highs in April, and you can connect the highs in August and the highs in October. When we break that trend line, which if we go up from here should be at about 200, that does confirm we're on our way higher from here.
Marvellous. Okay, what's next?
So the next one is the dog of the week, Standard Chartered.
Oh, yeah, they've had some problems. You know, the thing is, they are in a bit of the maelstrom, the middle of the storm there, because they're in the Far East in the banking sector, and they've had lots of problems there. They've laid people off, they had a new board come in, and then they cut their dividend. But and they seem to be recovering. They went down to, £6.10 or something like that. Back when was that? I can't see when that was, 9th of September or something. And they started to recover towards £8, and they've come back now, back down to almost £6.35. But it's a good chance to check out if they've got a double bottom here, isn't it?
Yeah, potentially. You know, if we test these lows and it holds, that gives us an idea that low was a good one, that we can trade against it. If you go to a monthly chart, though, and look back, there is support a little bit lower from here. So potentially, if it doesn't hold, we are going down to sort of 535, 540, 550, which is the 2001 and 2009 lows.
Wow.
I have a lot of like Fibonacci confluence levels around 610, 615. I think that there's a good chance that this will hold on a retest, and we can look for some support here. But for right now, it's a very speculative buy. I think people need to watch and see that we can hold and turn this around. There is minor resistance at 680 that we would have to clear, and then major resistance around 750. If we can do that, you know, then we can definitely say we've bottomed. And then the fact that we're on a monthly chart at the bottom of such a massive range, I think that this does, you know, have really good potential. But at the moment, it's too dangerous. You need to make sure that this has stopped going down.
Yeah, and if you're a long-term investor there, I mean, and you want to try and get in there at a low level, you could scale in, put a third of the total amount you're intending investing, put a third in, and then scale in slowly, isn't it? You could do that.
Yes, you could. Mm. Yeah, and we are quite close to levels where it definitely is a bargain.
Yeah. Okay. And what's next?
You just want to see a sign that it stopped going down first.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
exactly.
Then
yeah. Okay.
Scale
cool.
in.
What's next, Nick?
Strat Aero. The ticker is Aero, A-E-R-O.
Yeah, well, I've got this the CEO tomorrow on the podcast, so I just want to look at this, because they deal in unmanned, basically drones in this country, and it's a huge market at the moment for this, or potentially a huge market. And a couple of people have said this is it's a good stock to get into, because that market is growing exponentially. But what are the charts?
Let's just make clear for the people that might start hating on it, that they aren't military drones. They don't kill people, do they?
No. In fact, all types of drone. So, but I think mainly commercial drones now, civil drones in air.
The ones that Amazon might deliver your shopping with.
Those kind of things, not firing drones. No, I mean small unmanned aircraft and stuff like that.
Brilliant.
I don't think it's killing people in far off fields indiscriminately. No, hopefully not. Hopefully not earning a couple of pennies off that. No. Okay, so how does
I'm in awe of these things. You know, isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
What you could do with a drone now. Yeah. Really fantastic.
Yeah, so code Aero. What are we looking at here?
Had a really nice rally, same time as everything else, end of September into October, and a really, really deep retracement. It's nearly filled the gap from when it broke higher at the end of September, and it's all bunched up. I think we've got a higher high, trying to put in a higher low. I think it could move higher, but if we go to the weekly, we've got a little bit of resistance at 6.55. I really would like to see us clear 6.55, and then we're on our way.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? Like I said, it peaked out almost just nearly 10 pence, didn't it, a few weeks back. It'd be nice to sort of just try and double your money, get it around about...
If we can find support here and we make a higher low, I think that we'll take that one out for sure.
Okay. Nice. Well, that's all right then.
But 6.55 is what we need to clear, which is the weekly 20 and that previous swing low middle October.
As support goes, where would this drop down?
I'd like to see a higher low here, but we haven't quite filled the gap. So, you know, anything you do now, you'd need a stop around 450.
Okay, but if I want to nick the price here, if I want to get a nice price on this, where can I put a limit order in, say, to get it filled? Where do I put that to get a nice price on this? Five pence?
I would say...
Or wouldn't it go that
down
low?
There? Yeah, no, it could... I think it could easily go back there. But I think that, you know, 550 is... Holding 550 is more likely and more bullish, so...
Okay, so you don't think... Maybe put it there?
No,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, marvellous. All right, what's next?
Okay, so the next one is Box Hill Technology, which is Box.
Yeah.
B-O-X.
Yeah, there's in the IT tech, and they supply a lottery and in the E circle there. So, high tech sort of lottery and all that stuff. They supply people that. And the share price, I mean, it's been trending up nicely, isn't it? It's been climbing slowly obviously still a penny stock, but it's been, since when was that?
A huge upside potential if you look where it's come from. You know, this one really does. Yeah, it does. But you know, it's had a really nice bounce. Had a massive spike up in April, and we've kind of really been trying to recover that. It looks like we've made quite a few waves higher. I think that we need another wave lower. I'd really like to see this for a bargain buy back at the 200-day moving average. And that right now is down at that spike.
0.23.
I know.
Well, if it's going there, I'm
buying. Well, we're back below the 50-day. We're back below the 20-day. We're holding on to the 200 with our knuckles at the moment.
Looking. We're just today, it's gone up today about 9%, isn't it? So today, it's looking like it's just above those 20 and 50-day on my chart.
If we close today above those, I would say that it takes away the possibility that we're going back to the 200-day. And then if we can get above and close above 4, we're on our way back to the highs. And we've broken out of this consolidation pullback.
Yeah, I'm putting my marker here at 0.33. And you can see a line going through it. A couple of times it's hit that and bounced off it. And in fact, previous resistance that was as well. It spiked high there.
Exactly.
Okay, marvellous.
So you know, we found their support there at the middle of October. We found the support there at the beginning of the month here. there's only so many times, you know, we'll dip into that liquidity pool and find buyers. You know, I think if it doesn't, if we test it again, it's likely not to hold.
I see. All right. And is there any more? Are we going for any more?
I think we have one more. No, Box Hill.
Atlas. Yeah, ADSS, Atlas, that's right.
Atlas Development.
Yeah, well, now this is a nightmare. This is my second stock in my penny stock punt millionaire challenge. And today they announced they're doing a placing of 500 million shares, which will double, more than double. At the moment, they've got 483 million in issue. So it'll double the amount of shares in issue. It's still below a billion, which is a magic mark for me. But obviously it's dilutive, and they're down about, they've been down 25% a day. They're down 19% at the moment. But I've noticed, though, it hasn't retested as lows, is it? The previous lows it was at before, which were like about 5.54,
0.55. No, we've held above those. And, you know, we looked at this in September, beginning of September, and we thought it was making a bull pennant. And I said, watch for a breakout. And we didn't break out. Instead, we came lower. I still think that this is bottoming. And when we came lower in September, we didn't take out, you know, the summer lows. And now we're still holding above those September lows. I think we're making another one of those triangle patterns. It has to stop going down and turn around again. And we're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
So I would say it's not over. Like, when you consider what they've done to the shares, we should be loads lower, and we're not.
Yeah, I mean, the company itself, they've got a cash burn there. They've got a problem with, you know, hopefully this extra cash will tide them over now for, I'm hoping, 6 months at least to a year till they get some contracts, because they're in the service sector and they're servicing mainly oil companies. And obviously, you know, all know what happened to the oil price. And so they've had a couple of problems there with fulfilling contracts coming off, cancelling. And so they've diversified away from that sector. And they've moved to a joint venture with an Ethiopian business. So hopefully they turn the business around. They're cutting back on costs. Hopefully they won't touch those lows. And maybe with a bit extra cash now, that's, you know, maybe it'll start grinding a bit higher, hopefully, you know.
That would be really good. Like, if we could hold close today above 6.6, that would be... and then, you know, find some support there for the next few days, then I think that this might be interesting.
Yeah, all right. Lovely.
But it's very speculative right now. You wait for it to bottom out and prove itself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what's an AIM stock? They're all speculative.
I know, crazy.
Yeah. Cool. All right, Nick, and how's your sort of personal trading going? Is it going well?
Yeah, we're doing all right. Like, you know, the stock markets have been really... another remarkable October. Exactly what we did, in fact, last October, which was just rally in a straight line. The FTSE is a bit weaker than the others. I think, you know, commodities are on the back foot again, but yeah, life's not too bad. Thank you.
Yeah, I think, what do you think? Are they just pulling back a little bit, ready for the Santa rally? Do you? You know, ready to have a good run at breaking, maybe not new highs, but at least give a bit of, respite to, you know, what a horrible couple of months it's been anyway. I think, you know, because at the moment, I think, especially on smaller stocks, a lot of people, it's hard work. You know, it's generally hard work.
So, you know, even with the market going up, I would say that it has been hard work. Yeah. I would agree, yeah, very much so.
Okay, marvellous. Well, Nick, can you send me some charts over?
I have got half of them done already, yes.
Well, that's brilliant. So I'll put those on sharepickers.com, and you can also there click on the link to follow Nick on Twitter, which is at Nick Trades. Cheers, Nick. Speak next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's all for now on the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. All I've got to say is this podcast is dedicated to Ashep99. That's the username on iTunes, who gave me a 5-star rating and cracking review on iTunes. And this is what Ashep99 says. Loving the podcast. Finally, a podcast that doesn't talk about their cats or who has upset them. I think I know who you're referring to. Justin gets straight to the point, gives great share information, and has MDs on, so you can hear news straight from the horse's mouth. So, and it's quite harsh, calling MD there a horse. I see what you mean. In fact, some, let's be honest, some companies could be run by horses to do a better job, couldn't they? the new feature, which actually has investors coming on and sharing their war stories and strategies, makes this already great podcast even better. I hope this continues to run for a long time, great podcast. It will. In fact, tomorrow on the podcast, I got a chap there who's very popular on bulletin boards. And in fact, he's got one of the busiest bulletin boards on the history of ADVFN. So that's quite impressive. And now he's on Twitter and he does very well in stocks and shares. He'll be coming on tomorrow to chat to me live on the podcast. So listen out for that. Don't forget, please don't buy anything based on your tip or recommendation on the podcast, as it's only just opinion. Please do your own research, and as it's your money you're investing. Thanks very much for listening, and I appreciate you getting involved and giving me ratings and reviews, and I will read out your rating or review and dedicate the podcast to you. But Ashep, this is your podcast, episode 333. Thanks for the rating and review. Muchos appreciators.
The ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.